Today on Wings, a Mother's Day special edition.
Oh, really? This is mine, is it? Okay. Thanks.
What are you doing? What's this?
That's the recorder. I put it on as you're starting to tell stories about music.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Hi, I'm Frieda Worden, series producer of Wings. I'm sheltering from the virus in Canada, and my 94-year-old mother is about 4,000 miles away in North Carolina, in a care facility where family is not allowed, for safety's sake, to visit. Nor are her music students allowed to come for lessons. That's a shame, because teaching music makes her happy, and it's made a lot of students happy, too. Many still call her mom, or their second mom. In addition to music, she teaches attitudes and habits that serve them well. On one of my visits last year, when she was 93, she let me record this interview.
Hello, and good morning. This is Isabel Samfield speaking. Now, what is the next question?
I wanted to ask about your experiences as a music teacher, because so many people have had wonderful careers in music because of you, or at least not been thrown out of their choirs.
Well, I always charged a little less than other teachers because it was so hard for me and for my family to give me all the music lessons. But I still considered myself one of the most successful music teachers when it came to helping people learn to understand music and to enjoy it. And even the students who had talent but weren't passionate about it, I was sorry to have to tell them that it was all right with me if they stopped playing, and that when they were 35 they could ask their parents, why didn't you make me continue?
You selected for and encouraged the ones who had talent to go on?
Yes, it was often the ones whose families had very little money. And I gave many personally given scholarships to students who in years later turned out very well, many of them still sticking with music as a profession. So I feel I've done a good deed.
Yes. How did you become a music teacher?
Growing up, I loved playing piano and had decided since age 5 that I would be a fine musician, performing all over the world, but certainly would never teach, never. But when my younger siblings came along, I told my parents, since you spend so much money on my musical education, let me teach Ben and Judy. So I did, and I found out it was fun, even though they were my little siblings.
Huh.
And then I began helping other people as a freshman.
We're having an interview. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. A freshman in college, I had two friends who couldn't carry a tune. We had gym together, and I began to teach them a little bit about how to sing while we were in the showers. So I thought, gee, it's working. And then my husband, Max Samfield, could not carry a tune too well. He'd switch keys and go off a little bit. I thought, can I live with a man who sings off-key in the shower? So I finally decided to solve that problem. I'd teach him how to carry a tune. And it turns out he couldn't do it very well because although he didn't have a low speaking voice, he had a very low singing voice. He's the only person I've ever known who could actually sing the bottom note on the piano keyboard.
Wow.
So he learned a lot. And we did get married for 49 years. We were married.
Wow. So I know that when you were young, you taught music in schools. Would you tell about that?
Well, I was a senior music student when I had to do what we call practice teaching. And I was assigned to a school in Texas, which was all 100% Mexican children who did not speak English at home, but were forced to speak English in some way at the school. I was given 60 third grade students in a big classroom, and I worried that they couldn't keep step when we had played marches. They didn't understand waltzes. But when I asked their regular teacher if I could teach them a few Mexican songs, she said, okay. Suddenly these children had rhythm. They all sang out, even the one who was a true monotone. I just encouraged him to sing out. And my black hair helped with a group of Mexican kids. And the teacher of their class, the red-headed lady who had been my teacher, music teacher in school when I was in the sixth grade, she gave me an A+ in student teaching.
Were you Samfield then, or were you still Leon?
I was still Leon. And so Isabel Leon is what my name looked like, and that helped.
Huh. Then you had another school music job.
Well, before I finished my senior year, now this was World War II, all the male music teachers were becoming engineers or they were in the military. So in Lockhart, Texas, they hadn't had a band director in 3 or 4 years. And I was hired to teach junior and senior band and senior grade chorus. So
you were a little young for that, weren't you?
I had not reached 19 when I started teaching. And I did get my music degree a few weeks after I turned 19. Mm. And I was teaching the whole year.
So how did you deal with these big kids?
Well, when the superintendent of that small school asked me how I would handle all these big kids, I said, I'm going to keep them so busy they won't have time to get into trouble. And that pretty much happened. And I also had to teach the band in the fall how to march on the football field between halves. And when they couldn't play very many notes, that was pretty difficult. I had some just toot on the first beat of the measure, and some play only the main notes and not the fast ones. And I had about 3 seniors who were pretty good musicians, and they really carried the band.
That's great. So I heard you got invited to teach at another high school after that, in West Texas?
Oh, before I started at Lockhart, I had offered to teach in Brackettville, Texas, and they were offering $3,000 a year, and I was making, as a supposedly part-time teacher in Lockhart, I was making $75 a month.
Wow.
And the full-time teachers were making $100 a month, including during the summer. So they made $1,200 a year. And when it came time to teach again in the fall, I decided not to go back to Lockhart because they weren't offering me any more money. and their superintendent had moved to a larger town in West Texas. So I taught part-time in the university junior high and had an orchestra. And I began work on my master's degree.
Your master's degree was in music pedagogy, or how did they name
it? We call it music ed.
What was your thesis?
I had planned to have my thesis be how to teach non-singers to sing. And I was having very good results with many people, including a rabbi who couldn't carry a tune. They said, no, it can't be scientific enough. And they talked me out of it, but the Music Teachers Association, or the Education Association in Texas, had a monthly bulletin or magazine. And I was told that if I did some research on what is being taught in the high schools in Texas, I could write about that, and they would publish my article on that subject when I finished, if they liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I did, and they published it later.
What was being taught that you can remember?
Well, they had band and orchestra. They didn't teach music theory, and I used to have one or two days a month where we didn't practice the instruments. We would talk about music so they could decipher a lot of the things and understand all those markings and read notes better, and what about different keys and key signatures and how you can do more than just do it by ear, although doing things by ear is a very, very useful talent.
On Wings, I'm Frieda Worden, and this is my Mother's Day tribute to Isabel Samfield. Aside from giving birth to and mothering me and my three sibs, she set us an example of sticking to what you love to do. For her, it was music, and music as a way of connecting to all sorts of people, across race, class, or creed. She's been a music director, a choir director, and an orchestra conductor, and played violin and viola in symphony orchestras. She sang in academic and religious and entertainment settings, and in nursing homes where people who seemed comatose would come to life and sing along. She studied languages so she could sing them correctly and learn the national anthems of foreign visitors. She was active in the Music Teachers Association. She attended workshops to keep up with new techniques. And when she was nearly 90, she taught herself French horn to join her retirement community band. At 93, she no longer had the strength for the French horn, but she finally agreed to give an unrehearsed interview about her favorite subject, music teaching.
So you moved to North Carolina in 1952?
Yes.
By then you had two children.
Yes.
Yes. And I know you set up your music teaching in North Carolina. Will you tell about that?
Well, I did. I applied for a position at Durham High School where they needed a music director, but they weren't accepting either women or Jews.
Wow.
So I didn't get a job, which I really wanted. And I decided, well, I've had all this training and I found I really love teaching, so I set up my own music studio. The newspaper in those days would have every week a little article about a family new in town. And when they came to interview us and found out I was a musician, that showed up in the article, and I began getting students.
Huh. I remember that house. It had a half bathroom downstairs. Oops, I'm making this chair creak. And I guess that was useful when you had music students.
It was very useful. And in the first house we lived in North Carolina, there was a living room, dining room, kitchen, and another side little room. So there are four rooms. And I used one of those rooms as my music studio, right next to the bathroom.
What instruments were you teaching?
I was teaching piano, violin, and voice.
How did your method of teaching evolve?
Well, it evolved because I had to figure out ways to get some of this knowledge into the heads of some of these kids so they really understood. And I began to realize that if I let them do what I was explaining, then playing or explaining myself, it worked a lot better.
Hmm.
And then for several summers, I took a 3-day intense music pedagogy, especially piano pedagogy playing, and I used everything I learned with my students, and most all those new things worked. And I also learned something about what's called Alexander technique, of how to use your body the best way it's meant to be. And that helped my students a lot. And both the singers and the pianists began to win prizes because they were so comfortable in the way they played.
Hmm. Tell a little bit about how you taught voice. What kinds of things did you do and tell people to get their voice production?
Teaching voice, well, part of it's posture and learning how to breathe deeply, but a lot of it is what we call vocal imagery. If you want a high note, you need to think that the voice is coming or vibrating in a different place from where a low note vibrates. And you can extend a person's range by having them take that into consideration.
So, specifically?
So, if you're going to sing a high note, you have to feel it's coming from the front of your face, up high in your cheeks, and really practically in your upper teeth. And with a very low note, you have to feel it comes at the very bottom of your sternum. And your lungs can fill up with air if they fill up from the bottom of your
torso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
And you also, if you lean forward or bend forward, you can't get good air. You really need very nice posture with width across the top of your torso.
Huh. Very interesting. What were some of your tips for teaching piano?
Well, a lot of my kids did very well with piano and won prizes, and some of them say they're still playing today, not as professional musicians.
Hmm.
I don't know if I have had any professional pianists. Some who were interested in jazz and so forth, after I gave them the basics, I sent them to a jazz pianist.
Hmm. Okay. But you had a lot of beginners. You gave them a good grounding, eh?
A lot of beginners. And many of those beginners, when they got to junior high, especially when they started young, wanted to play in the band or the orchestra. And so they did very well in those groups because they knew a lot more about music.
Like how to read notes?
That helps.
Yeah.
I also had a youth orchestra for 3 years that was in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And we had auditions, and one child, little child from China, played so well, such advanced music. But when it came to the music reading, which you need to be able to do when you're in an orchestra, she really bombed. And so I put her in third violin.
Mm-hmm.
Her Chinese mother came to me yelling at me, "This child has soloed with orchestra since she was 5 years old, and why is she in third violin?" I said, "Because she's just now learning to read notes." Huh? And her mother, I'm sure, went back to the violin teacher and screamed at her, because pretty soon this child was reading notes, and I moved her gradually up to first violin.
Did some of your students become successful?
Yes. One who was a jazz singer when I met her, she was singing in a with a dance band when I was at a dance. She became an opera singer when she went to college, got a master's in music, and she performed in many operas, and she even spent time in China teaching singing.
Wow.
And several have become music teachers, many whom I started as children took other instruments, and years and years later they're still playing their instruments as a hobby.
Isabel Samfield's primary idea of success is teaching people to effectively apply themselves, their voices, their breath, their fingers, their energy, and their minds, in a process that both allows them to be expressive and embeds them in a culture of cooperation, precision, persistence, listening, pleasure-giving, and respect. She finds it just as rewarding to teach an elderly woman with Parkinson's how to sing without quavering as to teach musical theater techniques to a budding young star. What she loves most is their growth. It makes her very happy to see the successful experience of music carry over into other parts of their lives. Nevertheless, a few of her students have achieved a degree of fame, becoming conductors, Broadway musical performers, and pop and rock successes. In 2020, one of her former voice students had a successful audition for American Idol.
I'm Franklin Boone, 27 years old, and I teach music at the School of Rock.
You're one of the instructors?
Yeah.
Oh, you must be a lot of fun, man. The only class to be in, right?
I hope so.
Mother remembers assigning Frank Boone a piece to learn from the musical Porgy and Bess, "It Ain't Necessarily So." But Franklin's mother would not let him sing a song skeptical of the Bible. 10 years later, in his American Idol audition, Boone gave a good example of the Samfield head resonance technique.
Well, the rain washed out in your love. You will know, oh, you know.
What are some of your favorite stories?
I think some of my favorite stories are teaching people who say they can't sing, and usually they're right, how to sing. And so often, it's because they're singing in the wrong register. Most of the people I've taught have lower voices. And so when there's a sort of change in what we call the register, they don't know how to make it. And so all they can do is growl out a few middle notes.
Are you talking about people whose voice has changed from their youth?
Well, sometimes. No, it really isn't that. Because most boys don't have problems if they're musical when they're children or can sing well. It takes them a little while to get their changed masculine voice, but they don't have that much trouble. But there are a few who suddenly can't sing when the voices change. And even girls have a little bit of change in voice when they get into the teen years and beyond. Mm. But by just helping them sing lower and playing games with them to have them produce a note, and then I find out what it is. And then I'll say, okay, produce a low note. And I'll find out what it is on the piano, and then we sort of bring things together, and pretty soon I found the right register for them to start with. And then after they get comfortable there, we can expand. And some of them I had one pianist who couldn't carry a tune, but after 2 or 3 years, she was teaching others how to sing.
Huh. You had musicals. I don't want to stop without you talking a little bit about your work with musicals.
I figured I have been music director for about 35 musicals. Some were little local things at a church or a school. But we've done lots of the Broadway repertoire. I started doing that when I was 17 and in college, my second year, third year. And I directed some musicals there, taught them how to sing, and I directed a little orchestra in the pit. And that was so much fun, and I was having fairly good success. So I have done for so many theater groups and colleges and community groups. I've done a lot of the major Broadway shows.
Wow. And you sung in some too.
I have sung in some. I was so nearsighted that when I would give vocal recitals, I could barely find the piano. But contact lenses made the difference, and I started auditioning for programs and got some nice roles in a few plays and musicals.
Tell the story, let's end with the story about when you were in Fiddler on the Roof and somebody forgot something.
Well, I was very surprised to get the role of Goldie, the mother, in the musical Fiddler on the Roof. And there's a scene where they have a Sabbath dinner on their Friday night, and at that dinner, you bless the candles, the wine, and the challah bread. Well, one night, when we were performing the show, the person in props forgot to put the candlesticks on the table. So just as I was getting ready to make the blessings over the candles, I thought, where are the candlesticks? So there was this nice long loaf of challah bread in front of me. So I picked up the candles and squished them into the bread, and nobody knew the difference. That was just, I did that just as the curtain was going back up.
All right. Well, this has been our interview with Isabel Samfield, who happens to be my mother, a woman much admired, and she's 93 years old yesterday, still teaching. And if you can't sing and you want to learn how, I recommend you give her a call.
Good publicity. Thank you.
Thank you.
That interview is from 2019. I saved it to release for the week of Mother's Day 2020. Now 94, Mom would still be teaching music if not for the COVID-19 epidemic. So far, there are no cases in the facility where she is staying, and I hope she'll be able to resume music teaching and having visits from her children in future. Find more about Isabel Samfield, including videos and student testimonials, on her tribute page on Facebook. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org. Thank you to all our supporters, including Isabel Samfield, Suzette Cullen, WERU-FM, your local community radio station, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose work on the gift economy can be found at gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. The Wings Sound logo is from Libana's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden, and this is the Women's International News Gathering Service.